joining me now is Patricia T. O'Connor, who is the author of, I would say, three books, Woe Is I, Words Fail Me, and You Send Me, and now the long-awaited fourth, Woe Is I, Jr., The Younger Gramophobe's Guide to Better English, in plain English, it says on the book jacket, and it's published by Putnam. It's always a pleasure to see you, Pat.
Thank you.
And we'll be talking a bit about this as the show continues. But I understand, in honor of the Tonys, you wanted to talk a bit about Broadway.
Yes, I got an interesting email from a listener of the program who mentioned the Dutch origins of Broadway, and I thought it was interesting and did a little more poking.
There are Dutch origins of Broadway? Are we talking about the street itself or the name? Because in
both.
England there are Broadways all over the place.
Yes, that's true. Well, this is
along
this
with
is,
the high streets
right.
and the King's Roads.
Exactly. Well, this is what happened. When the Dutch arrived in New Amsterdam, or what was to be New Amsterdam in the early 1600s, they began using as their main road what was already an Indian trail called the Wiskwaskik Trail, which ran the whole length of the island. This eventually became the Dutch settlers' main path. At that time, it extended from the tip of Manhattan to about City Hall Park, or just about across the street from where we're sitting, and they called it Breedway, which is a Dutch for Broadway. Well, there had already been, it was already a word in English, but in virtually all the Germanic languages, they already had the words for broad and way, and many of them had the word Broadway, which meant just wide road. In fact, wide had been in English since the 900s and broad since the 700s. So they were very old words. But that's how the word Broadway came about. And it now goes clear up into Westchester, as we know.
And if you keep on going the Boston Post Road, it goes all the way up to Boston, the same,
right.
pretty much the same road.
Right.
You don't want to go that way because of all the lights.
Well, there's a broken heart for everyone, you know. But in the 1880s, people started using the word Broadway to refer to New York's theater district. And in fact, Walter Winchell called Broadway the hardened artery, I think because of the heartbreak of showbiz. But Winchell had a lot of great vocabulary words for talking about the showbiz celebs that he wrote about in his columns. When a couple were romancing, he would say they were Adam and Eving. When they were married, they were Lohengrind. Mm. When they had a baby, they were storked. And when they were divorced, they were renovated. Yeah, I noticed the
Our number here is 212-433-9692, 212-433-WNYC. Well, I guess that was the style at the time, but mm-hmm. Walter Winchell had so many other things that since have made people remember him with less than fondness. This
oh,
is
yes.
just another example, as far as I'm concerned.
Yes.
The thing about Broadway is that even people from all over the world who call the Bowery Street, know not to call Broadway anything other than Broadway. Where's Broadway?
Right, exactly.
The problem in New York is that you then have to say East Broadway, West Broadway, or Broadway.
Right. I took the Broadway local to get down here, by the way.
Did you?
Yes, I did.
And you wound up coming out on Broadway?
City Hall. I came out at City Hall Park, so I felt thoroughly Broadway'd. Broadsided.
Is there anything else you want to say before we start taking some of these calls?
Not about Broadway, but I did have someone sent me an irresistible item, another listener. He and his wife, this is David in Brooklyn, he and his wife were coming home from a trip to Europe on a Delta flight, and they were given cookies that were wrapped up, and the wrapper listed the list of ingredients, and at the bottom it said, manufactured in a nut environment.
A nut environment.
We know what those
yes.
are like. Yes.
Well, that's for people who are allergic. I was stunned the other day on the subway looking at the ads You don't ride the subways because you live out of town. But there's a Reebok campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things has the word everywhere. And they spelt it E-V-E-Y-W-H-E-R-E.
Everywhere.
Left that R out. And it is plastered all over subway cars. And I wondered what that tells us about the state of proofreading today, that nobody noticed it in that whole process from the artist writing, doing it to the account executive looking at it to the printer.
It has to be deliberate.
No, none of the other things have a whole bunch of slogans have any misspellings in them. It's only that one.
But it's been repeated endlessly everywhere?
Well, in the subway car I was on, it was all over the place along with these other ones. It was all about kind of, Reebok sneakers slowing down, I guess, was the point. One was slow down and smell of garbage, if I remember correctly. A New York campaign, but everywhere.
Well, maybe it was an attention-getting
thing. Yeah, it
sure
got my attention. Should we take some calls?
Please.
Our number, 212-433-9692. George from New York. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. I have two concerns. One regarding...
You have only two concerns? Oh, my God, you're so lucky.
My entire life, sure. One concerns redundancy and another filler words. Redundancy. When someone says, the reason why, isn't why redundant?
No, I don't think so.
No?
I don't think the reason why is redundant. I think it's redundant if you say the reason why is because. But I think reason why can be defended.
Oh, I don't like to be wrong, but
I can't say that you're wrong. I simply say that I think maybe you're being a little too literal.
I see. And secondly, my children and others are saying like and you know so much as filler words, and I don't know what to do about it. Do you have any advice how to break them of this habit?
I hate to admit this.
Even with adults.
I think maybe Leonard's laughing because when I first started doing radio appearances 11 or 12 years ago, I said like all the time, or I said you know. That was it. I said, you know, all the time.
Mm.
And, of course, people sent me letters and emails about it. So I just began being very aware of what I was saying. I think it's too much to ask children to be
awareness
very
part,
aware
I,
of what
I
they're...
I try to make them aware of it, but then I'm an ogre if I...
But I think it goes further. One of the reasons that you stop saying you know, and other people I know, I'm very careful not to say all the time.
Mm-hmm.
People in broadcasting try to cut down on that because we're being watched. But your kids are talking to their friends who are all saying like and you know.
Correct.
And I think it would be almost impossible for them to speak correctly and still be part of the group.
Mm-hmm.
So you can only hope that by the time they reach 25 and go into broadcasting, that they will have stopped doing that.
So hope is the answer.
Hope is eternal.
I think so. I think a lot of the verbal tics that kids develop are grown out of later.
I used to say everything was great.
Yeah.
Now
it's not so great, huh?
Nothing seems to be all that great. Thank you so much for calling us, George. We go now to Johanna from Brooklyn. Hi, Johanna.
Hi, it's Joanna.
Oh, Joanna, I'm so sorry. They spelled it with an H.
That's okay. I've been trying to call for months, so I'm so surprised I got through. My question is, often in especially commercials, I hear resiliency and dependency used instead of, say, resilience. Skin has more resilience.
Yeah.
Seems like the correct usage to me, and I was wondering if you could
I know. Those are unnecessary suffixes, and what usually happens with those is they eventually make it into the language. I'm checking resiliency right here in American Heritage, and I'll bet you anything it's in here.
Oh, it drives me nuts.
I wouldn't be surprised. Resiliency. Yep, there it is. Resiliency.
Oh, no.
It says it just means resilience. There isn't even a usage note to say but it's redundant. It appears right under resiliency. That's what happens. These things make it into dictionaries, and then they become accepted.
So which would happen first, though? Is it the incorrect usage that spreads and then it makes it to the dictionary, or is it in...
Well, when a usage becomes common enough, lexicographers include it in their dictionaries.
They try to hold the fort as long as they can, and then at a certain point they just give in? Is that what happens, Pat?
Well, I don't know if they're really... I don't think they see themselves as holding the fort. I think they see themselves as describing the state of the diction of the language as it is at a particular time.
Well, maybe not holding the fort. Maybe holding the forte now. It used to be hold the fort.
You're right. That's another example.
This is WNYC. And WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. My guest is Patricia T. O'Connor, who has just added a fourth book to her list of books in print. This one is Woe Is I, Junior, for the kids of that man who called in to ask about like and similar words.
Mm-hmm.
And we are taking your calls at 212-433-9692. We also get a slew of emails while you're on the air, and of course after you're on the air, and I forward many of them to you. If people want to reach you directly, how do they do that?
Grammarphobia.com, and I do my best to answer all the emails that I can, and I don't always get to everything by the time the next show runs around, but I do try.
Now, there's a problem with grammarphobia.com. Somebody wrote me a complaint email saying, I can't get through to Grammarphobia. And she was spelling it G-R-A-M-M-E-R.
Mm-hmm. Well, see, I...
You have to know how to spell grammar.
I try to filter out those people. but no, I'm not sympathetic to people who can't even spell the word grammar.
Well, it is a difficult word.
No, please.
We have an email from a listener here. Ms. O'Connor, can you use widowed when referring to a man? In other words, is it okay to write he was widowed at the age of 80? For that matter, is it okay to use widow as a verb for either a woman or a man? I'm assuming that it's okay to write she was widowed at the age of 80 because I recall hearing it more than a few times.
Right. I don't see anything wrong with it.
Widowed either way.
Right. Right. When a man becomes widowed, he's a widower.
Mm.
And when a woman becomes widowed, she's generally just referred to as a widow.
So you could say he was widowered?
No, I don't think so. I think it's just he's widowed.
Uh-huh. Okay, let's go to Dennis from Somerset, New Jersey. Hi, Dennis. You're on the air.
Thank you. Good afternoon to you and Patricia.
Hello.
I'm calling about a construction that I hear more and more that I know I was taught in grammar school is definitely wrong. And that's the use of a noun followed by a pronoun immediately, like my teacher, she, the president, he. I'm hearing this more and more, even on from like newscasters and people on radio and TV, that you'd expect not to use such thing. I don't know if that's becoming a part of the language now, or if it's just still considered a misuse.
It's still considered a misuse. It's sort of an emphatic kind of usage. It's not enough for people to say my teacher did something. Saying my teacher he or my teacher she puts a pause in there and allows the person to repeat the subject.
Does this come out of European languages? In French, you do that automatically. That is part of the language.
I don't know if it... I doubt it. I
is that all these French speakers who are translating into English?
Well, no. I think you hear this a lot from kids, and I doubt if they're influenced by French.
alas.
It just may be a natural way of speaking. Maybe that's what they're trying to tell us.
Let's take some more calls. Our number 212-433-9692. Michael from Mount Vernon. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, it's actually Micah.
Micah. Mm.
Yeah. I'm calling because I need your help between an ongoing argument between my wife and I. She's a stickler for for language and how it works. In fact, I don't even have a chance to win an argument unless I can reference the Oxford English Dictionary.
Mm. Have you seen a counselor, a marriage counselor? Or maybe an English teacher?
She wins hands down, so I don't really, except for on this one. So there's a joke. The joke goes like this, and I understand it's grammatically incorrect. Two peanuts were walking in a park. One was assaulted.
No.
That's it. That's the joke. She says it's incorrect because it should be one was a salted peanut. But then the
Come on.
Oh.
Sounds like you're on my side.
I'm on your side.
Oh,
except
gee.
You should have said between my wife and me. I wouldn't correct you if I weren't the grammar maven.
That's really lots of
awful.
Jokes are based on play of words,
anything,
and you don't get you,
anything
you're
gonna
do
that begins. Two peanuts were walking down. You know.
Yeah, right. Well, anyway, Michael, you should not be telling jokes like that. A little too corny. let's go to Larry from Yorktown Heights. Larry, hi. You're on the air.
Leonard. Hi, Patricia. Patricia, the word one is always singular, like one cooks with gusto, one runs with speed. But when you see it in dependent clause, such as this, culinary schools require that one cook with speed. You mm-hmm. wouldn't say that one cooks with speed, would you?
No, but it's not because one is suddenly becoming plural.
Yeah, what's the
it's
reason?
It's because when you say require that, you go into the subjunctive. You require that one go, that one run, that one see, instead of sees. Right. It's not because the one changes in number.
Okay. Well, I thought the subjunctive was something that was contrary to fact. I thought maybe that was the imperative.
That's one of the uses. Another one is the when you use a noun of demanding, requesting, ordering, I order that he be
do work, yeah, or do his, yeah.
Right, right.
Okay, that's great. I was knocking my brains out over that one. Thank you, Patricia.
You're welcome.
And thank you
Enjoy
for calling
show,
us.
Leonard. Thank you.
Juliana from Midtown, somewhere in Midtown, New York. Hi.
The foothills of Murray Hill.
Ah.
Good afternoon, and thanks for being there. The last time Miss O'Connor was on, there was the word filibuster.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe, and I could be wrong, you said it was Dutch. However, I looked it up, and it comes from the Spanish, filibustero, because the Spanish occupied Holland. I had a Dutch father. So that's where the word came from, I believe, and I could be wrong.
Well, perhaps can we say this and have the both of you write?
It comes
out as Spanish, but the Dutch brought it to the United States.
Mm-hmm. You got it. And here's more importantly, my next question. People pronounce the word to, like I'm going to the store. They say te,
mm-hmm.
T-E. And it's across the board, the most, you know, highly educated to me, who went to New York City public schools in the 40s, and I was taught phonics, and I don't even mm-hmm. know what a subjunctive is.
But let's deal with this for a moment.
Right, a lot of short prepositions are pronounced in a clipped way. At is sometimes pronounced that way. In to, into, they're pronounced a, in, into, ta, and I think it's
just natural.
It's a pronunciation issue that just has to do with alighting words and speaking quickly. It's not as though someone's using a word incorrectly. It's just pronouncing it in a clipped way.
But let's get back to filibuster for a moment,
uh-huh.
because we use the word when we're talking about people filibustering in Congress.
Right.
But yesterday I had a guest on talking about Aaron Burr, and he was one of many people who filibustered in territories that the United States was looking to annex. And Andrew Jackson had filibustered. Others had. They had raised little private armies and gone into Florida and, and other places. And Aaron Burr filibustered in the new Louisiana territory and wound up, in his case, because he was unpopular at the time, wound up being brought up on charges of treason, which didn't stick. They just said, John Marshall said, no, he's just filibustering.
Well, it does have that other meaning.
You don't hear that much because people are not raising are not raising private armies these days, are they?
No.
You know, I was hoping after I retired from radio,
you'll raise a private army.
Maybe I'll just raise a ruckus. Patricia, go ahead.
They have that other meaning of piracy.
Isn't that weird? But they have nothing to do with each other. Speaking for long periods in Congress or raising a private army.
Well, free boot is really how it's a literal meaning, right? In all those, in French, Spanish, and
is that
Dutch,
what it means?
Free. Let me see. Free boot.
I always thought free boot was a town in New Jersey.
Oh yeah, even in Spanish, filibustero, a freebooter.
So that brings us into piracy as well.
Yeah.
Patricia T. O'Connor is a former editor at the New York Times and other newspapers, and the author of a number of books. The most recent is Woe Is I, Junior, The Younger Gramophobe's Guide to Better English. It is just out from Putnam, and we will continue our conversation after we take a little break. You can keep on calling 212-433-9692.
And what I feel in my heart, they tell sincerely. No other words can tell it half so clearly. Three little words, eight little letters, which simply mean I
what I'd give for that wonderful phrase, to hear those three little words. That's all I'd live for the rest of my days. And what I feel in
we're back with Patricia T. O'Connor, her latest book just out. This is a mint copy.
Exactly.
Woe Is I, The Youngest Gramophobe's Guide to Better English, from Putnam. And I found myself saying, yeah, instead of you during that break. I guess even radio hosts sometimes shorten things. But, of course, French is based on that, isn't it?
Sure.
And we elide
words as
well.
It's all squished together. I think only the Italians really have that crystal clear pronunciation. But it depends then parts of Italy. You go to Naples, and, of course, everything's squished together.
They also make great pasta in
Italy,
they
do.
Don't they?
Oh, yeah.
Our number here is 212-433-9692. I also read some of the things that come in on email. And this woman, Melissa, says, I hear the word healthily used often and wondered if it was an actual word. I would use healthy and have actually told people that healthily isn't a word. Could you let me know what the correct term is?
A lot of people have emailed me about the same issue. They'll say, isn't it incorrect to say eat healthy? Shouldn't you say eat healthily? And no, eat healthy is perfectly okay. Eat healthily, I think, would imply that you were a healthy person eating, or you're eating in a salubrious manner or something like that. It would be silly.
With a certain amount of gusto?
Yeah, right.
This person asks, how about the use of aggressiveness instead of aggression? Is that correct? And I will add to that the word aggress. He was aggressing. Your child was aggressing at school. Oh, it's used all the time.
I've never heard aggressing used as a noun. Aggression and aggressiveness are both words, and I don't see anything wrong with either one of them.
This person asks, why say attendee for one who attends? I'd say attender, as in employee, employer.
Well, I think if you said attender, it would sound like that boat that accompanies a cruise ship.
Or a little love note, a tender.
Right, right.
Well, yeah. Okay. Should we go to some of the people who are willing to talk?
Yeah.
Our number, 212-433-9692. Bill from Queens, you're on the air.
Yes, Bill from Queens. And I'd like to ask Patricia if she would agree that certain words that you hear in the media constantly, such as artist and icon, have lost their validity in a sense.
Well, I think when things are used a lot in the media, they tend to get stale, and they do tend to lose their newness or freshness.
Country music legend, Willie.
Oh,
exactly.
Or even Willie must get tired of that.
Or, excuse me for interrupting that, but when you hear the Grammy Awards or the Oscars, everybody is an artist or artiste.
Oh, right.
Would you agree that...
Yeah, I agree.
Maybe.
But they're all artists, aren't they?
They are. But still, when you hear it over and over again, you think, oh, I know what the next word is going to be. You know what's coming.
Well, Pat, what do we do if somebody rises above the norm? Everybody in the Grammys is a recording artist, mm-hmm. but some are living legends. Some are icons, aren't they? What do we say to distinguish them from all the others, the riffraff?
You call them immortals. I don't know.
Equally,
I agree it's a problem. It's a problem coming up with new and fresh ways of saying things.
Yeah.
And we can't always do it. But when you can do it, it's a nice thing to aim for.
Sometimes the cliche is the only way.
Right. That's why it became a cliche. It was useful and it did the job.
Monica from Manhattan. Hi. You're on the Leonard Lopate Show.
Hi, thank you for allowing my question. It is referring to the redundancy that you began the show with. And I thought Patricia is using a redundancy herself. I was wondering if it is one or not when you say, when I first started. You hear that very, very often.
And true.
It always bothers me.
I could have just said when I started. And I'll tell you something, Monica, if I were writing... instead of speaking on the radio, I would not have said when I first started. I would have written when I started,
yeah,
or when I first made radio appearances.
Yeah, thank
but
you,
there's something about speech, right? I'm not as conscious of, and I'm not excusing myself.
But the rules are different with the spoken language, aren't they?
Exactly, and I always feel. On this show, very conversational with you, Leonard. I feel more as
that's because I speak incorrectly most of the time. I give you license.
Yeah.
I know many times I'll start a sentence thinking it's going to go in one direction and then suddenly find myself going in another direction.
Exactly.
And then
that,
I have to worry about all the verbs and everything complimenting
each other. How do I get back to where I was? Now, what was the beginning of that sentence? That's what conversation is like. And I'm not excusing myself, but I'm saying... My choice of words isn't as good as it would be
so
if
is Monica,
I were writing.
So, Monica, is Pat forgiven? Thank you for calling
Forgive
us.
Forgive me, Monica.
Will from Manhattan. Hi, you're on the Leonard Lopate Show.
Yes, the construction and or, as in A and or B.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I realize it's A or B or both.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm beginning to like the construction without the and/or, just say and or.
Mm-hmm. Well, slash becomes a problem. It's really it
right.
really feels ugly in the middle of a sentence. And but sometimes you if you have author adventurer or something like that, you almost feel like you have to put that slash in there.
Right. I think and or is a very useful construction. I think it's overused. But there are times when it comes in quite handy, and it is awkward with the slash. It may be that in 25 or 50 years, we'll find and or used without the slash. It will come to take it for granted as a legitimate usage, and we won't be apologizing for it the way we do when we put the slash in.
Thank you for calling us. Sam from Armont.
Airmont.
Airmont. I'm so sorry.
I'm up in
I make
air.
Mistakes all the time.
Wow, Leonard Lopate, my God. It's, oh, yeah, you and Patricia O'Connor. I have a question about Terry Gross. Now, you're on a first-name basis with her. So I want to know why she says anyways all the time.
Well, as you point out, Terry and I, we sup together almost every night. We're really close. She lives in Philadelphia. I live here. A number of people say anyways instead of anyway. Is it because, in Terry's case, she lives in Philadelphia? Is this a Philadelphia-ism in the way that many
Ewens.
People I know from Philadelphia say height instead of height?
And they say Ewens.
Mm-hmm.
And they say Danton.
But what about anyways? This is something a lot of people do.
I don't know if it's a Philadelphia-ism. A lot of people do it in their speech. I'm sure she doesn't write
It's incorrect.
It is incorrect. But at the same time, she's such a charming person, she can get away with it.
We forgive you, Terry. Ben from Hewlett. It's not Hewlett-Packard, right? Just Hewlett?
Just Hewlett.
Okay,
thank you. I'm intrigued by the fact that Patricia, a couple of moments ago, differentiated between healthy and healthily. My call is about the program that you had with her some weeks ago, and you responded to many of your callers by saying, I am well. And Patricia made no comment about it. Now, it's a copulative verb, and it's a predicate. Adjective. Is this now okay? Has it become acceptable to say I am well?
I say I am well instead of how are you? I am well rather than I am good, which I think means something quite different.
Well,
I am well is okay. I'm asking Patricia.
They're both correct. If you say I am well, you're implying that you're in good shape. You're you're healthy. There's
you
nothing wrong with you.
Finally, or I am sickly.
Uh-huh. Or you could say, I am sick or I am sickly. But when you say, I am good, what you mean is that things are going well for you.
I always thought that I am good means that I'm telling you that I'm not one of those bad people.
No, I have to agree with the caller that with the verb to be, you use an adjective modifier instead of an adverb, instead of an adverb. So
sometimes I meet people, I say, how are you? If it's a particularly attractive woman, she says, I am good. I think, well, okay, so she's...
she's not available.
Not available.
No, but I agree with the caller that there's nothing wrong with I am good. Nothing wrong with I am well either, except that I am well, it has more of an implication of a reference to your health.
Well, which is what I'm usually thinking about anyway.
Right. And I am good can mean I'm happy, things are going nicely, etc.
We go to Maggie from Morristown. Hi, Maggie.
Hi, Leonard. I just wanted to say a word about the ta and to, another caller mentioned earlier. I teach ESL, and in American English, when we have an unstressed syllable or an unstressed word in a sentence, we don't use the full vowel. We say ta. In fact, it's the most common sound in English, and it has a special name, which is called the joie.
Mm-hmm.
The joie.
It's the joie de vivre.
I'm sorry?
It's the joie de vivre.
Yes, so, the way it is, I guess. So if you were to say atomic, tom is the stressed syllable, and so you pronounce ah, but you don't say atomic, you say atomic. And if you say atom, then the ah becomes an ah, atom. Mm-hmm. And prepositions are almost always unstressed in American English, so we say ta. It's just a very common and acceptable way of speaking.
Thank you. You make me feel so much better.
So you make me feel so good.
So good. Good, not well, in fact. Thank you for calling us, Maggie, and straightening us out on that. Edna from Westport, Connecticut.
Oh, hi. One thing that drives me crazy that I hear newscasters and all kinds of people on the air misuse, I think, is the word of. Of OF. They'll say it's not that big of a problem.
Yeah, we're hearing that a lot these days.
Yeah, instead of just saying not that big.
Now, why do you think that is, Pat? It's actually an intrusive word in that case, isn't it?
It is. The way to say that would be it's not that big a deal. I think sometimes that people think they need to add the extra of because you might say it was quite a deal, but not that big of a deal. I think when there's a negative in there, people think they have to add the of. I can't really explain it.
We have run out of time. Pat will be back on June 20th. By the way, there's her book, the new book for children, What Was I, Junior, which is in bookstores right now. And you can go to grammarphobia.com and click on Pat's blog to see a selection of language questions from WNYC listeners. If you want to ask her a question, and many people couldn't get on the air, unfortunately, you can email her at mailbox@grammarphobia.com. Pat, thank you so much for being with us again.
Thank you.
On tomorrow's show, two underreported features. First, Laos, which has fallen off the radar since the end of the Vietnam War and the communist takeover in 1975. And then, whether Japan is offering aid to poor countries like Laos in exchange for supporting its pro-whaling campaign. Plus, Nathan Englander's novel about Jews in Buenos Aires and Arnold Rampersad's important new biography of Ralph Ellison. By the way, if you've missed something on the show or just want to hear something again, you can listen to archives of past programs on WNYC.org. The Leonard Lopate Show is produced by Sarah English, Brenna Farrell, and Blake Neeshick. Melissa Egan is the executive producer. We had help today from Stephen Valentino, Barbara Kahn, and Sarah Rivka Davidson. Debbie Daughtry was at the audio controls. I'm Leonard Lopate, your host. We'll see you tomorrow.